Something sounded in the darkness. Vin felt a chill, looking up. All was black around her.
It can't be. He can't.
Something slammed into her spire. Vin cried out, jumping away. She pulled herself toward another spire, caught it weakly, then immediately pushed off again. The Inquisitor followed, thuds sounding as he jumped from spire to spire behind her.
He found me. He couldn't see me, hear me, or sense me, but he found me.
Vin hit a spire, holding it by one hand, limply hanging in the night. Her strength was nearly gone.
I have to get away. Hide.
Her hands were numb, and her mind felt nearly the same. Her fingers slipped from the cold, wet metal of the spire, and she felt herself drop free into the darkness. She fell with the rain. However, she went only a short distance before thudding against something hard, the roof of a particularly tall bit of the palace. Dazed, she climbed to her knees, crawling away from the spire, seeking a corner.
Hide, hide, hide.
She crawled weakly to the nook formed by another tower. She huddled against the dark corner, lying in a deep puddle of ashy rainwater, arms wrapped around herself. Her body was wet with rain and blood. She thought, for just a moment, that she might have escaped. A dark form thumped to the rooftop. The rain was letting up, and her tin revealed a head set with two spikes, a body cloaked in a dark robe. She was too weak to move, too weak to do more than shiver in the puddle of water, clothing plastered to her skin. The Inquisitor turned toward her.
"Such a small, troubling thing you are," he said.
He stepped forward, but Vin could barely hear his words. It was growing dark again. No, it was just her mind. Her vision grew dark, her eyes closing. Her wound didn't hurt anymore. She couldn't even think. A sound like shattering branches. Then arms gripped her. Warm arms, not the arms of death. She forced her eyes open.
"Kelsier?"
she whispered. But it wasn't Kelsier's face that looked back at her, streaked with concern. It was a different, kinder face. She sighed in relief, drifting away as the strong arms pulled her close, making her feel oddly safe in the terrible storms of night. I don't know why Quan betrayed me. Even still, this event haunts my thoughts. He was the one who discovered me. He was the terrace philosopher who first called me the hero of ages. It seems ironically surreal that now, after his long struggle to convince his colleagues, he is the only major terrace holyman to preach against my reign. 15.
"You took her with you?" Doxin demanded, bursting into the room. "You took Vin into Credic Shaw. Are you bloody insane?"
"Yes," Kelsier snapped. "You've been right all along. I'm a madman, a lunatic. Perhaps I should have just died in the pits and never come back to bother any of you."
Doxin paused, taken aback by the force in Kelsier's words. Kelsier pounded the table in frustration, and the wood splintered from the force of the blow. He still burned pewter, the metal helping him resist his several wounds. His mist cloak lay in tatters, his body sliced by a half-dozen different small cuts. His entire right side burned with pain. He'd have a massive bruise there, and he'd be lucky if none of his ribs were cracked. Kelsier flared the pewter. The fire within felt good. It gave him a focus for his anger and his self-loathing. One of the apprentices worked quickly, tying a bandage around Kelsier's largest gash. Clubs sat with Ham at the side of the kitchen. Breeze was away visiting a suburb.
"By the Lord Ruler, Kelsier," Doxin said quietly.
"Even Doxin," Kelsier thought. "Even my closest friend swears by the Lord Ruler's name. What are we doing? How can we face this?"
"There were three Inquisitors waiting for us, Dox," Kelsier said.
Doxin paled.
"And you left her there?"
"She got out before I did. I tried to distract the Inquisitors as long as I could, but..."
"But..."
One of the three followed her. I couldn't get to it. Maybe the other two Inquisitors were simply trying to keep me busy so that their companion could find her.
Three Inquisitors, Doxson said, accepting a small cup of brandy from one of the apprentices.
He downed it. We must have made too much noise going in, Kelsier said. Either that, or they were already there for some reason, and we still don't know what's in that room.
The kitchen fell silent. The rain outside picked up again, assaulting the building with a reproachful fury.
So, Ham said, what of Vin?
Kelsier glanced at Doxson and saw pessimism in his eyes. Kelsier had barely escaped, and he had years of training. If Vin was still in Cretic Shaw... Kelsier felt a sharp twisting pain in his chest.
You let her die, too. First Mare, then Vin. How many more will you lead to slaughter before this is through?
She might be hiding somewhere in the city, Kelsier said, afraid to come to the shop because the Inquisitors are looking for her.
Or perhaps for some reason she went back to Feliz.
Maybe she's out there somewhere, dying alone in the rain.
Ham, Kelsier said, you and I are heading back to the palace. Docs take Lestibones and visit other thieving crews. Maybe one of their scouts saw something. Clubs sent an apprentice to Rainu's mansion to see if she went there.
The solemn group started to move, but Kelsier didn't need to state the obvious. He and Ham wouldn't be able to get close to Cretic Shaw without running afoul of guard patrols. Even if Vin was hiding in the city somewhere, the Inquisitors would probably find her first. They would have...
Kelsier froze, his sudden jerk causing the others to pause. He'd heard something.
Hurried footsteps sounded as Lestibones rushed down the stairs and into the room, his lanky form wet with rain.
Someone's coming! Out of the night with the calling!
Vin?
Ham asked hopefully. Lestibones shook his head.
Big man. Robe.
This is it, then. I've brought death to the crew. I've led the Inquisitors right to them.
Ham stood, picking up a wooden stave. Doxson pulled out a pair of daggers, and Clubs's six apprentices moved to the back of the room, eyes wide with fright. Kelsier flared his metals. The back door to the kitchen slammed open. A tall, dark form in wet robes stood in the rain, and he carried a cloth-wrapped figure in his arms.
Sazed,
Kelsier said.
She is badly wounded,
Sazed said, stepping quickly into the room, his fine robes streaming with rainwater.
Master Hammond, I require some pewter. Her supply is exhausted, I think.
Ham rushed forward as Sazed set Vin on the kitchen table. Her skin was clammy and pale, her thin frame soaked and wet.
She's so small, Kelsier thought. Barely more than a child. How could I have thought to take her with me?
She bore a massive bloody wound in her side. Sazed set something aside, a large book he'd been carrying in his arms beneath Vin, and accepted a vial from Hammond, then bent down and poured the liquid down the unconscious girl's throat. The room fell silent, the sound of pounding rain coming through the still-open door. Vin's face flushed slightly with color, and her breathing seemed to steady. To Kelsier's alimantic bronze senses, she began to pulse softly with a rhythm not unlike a second heartbeat.
Ah, good,
Sazed said, undoing Vin's makeshift bandage.
I feared that her body was too unfamiliar with alimancy to burn metals unconsciously. There is hope for her, I think. Master Claydent, I shall require a pot of boiled water, some bandages, and the big medical bag from my rooms. Quickly now!
Clubs nodded, waving for his apprentices to do as instructed. Kelsier cringed as he watched Sazed's work. The wound was bad, worse than any he himself had survived. The cut went deep into her gut. It was the type of wound that killed slowly but consistently. Vin, however, was no ordinary person. Pewter would keep an allomancer alive long after their body should have given out. In addition, Sazed was no ordinary healer. Religious rites were not the only things that keepers stored in their uncanny memories. Their metal minds contained vast wealths of information on culture, philosophy, and science. Clubs ushered his apprentices from the room as the surgery began. The procedure took an alarming amount of time, Ham applying pressure to the wound as Sazed slowly stitched Vin's insides back together. Finally, Sazed closed the outer wound and applied a clean bandage, then asked Ham to carefully carry the girl up to her bed. Kelsier stood, watching Ham carry Vin's weak, limp form out of the kitchen. Then he turned to Sazed questioningly. Dachshund sat in the corner, the only other one still in the room. Sazed shook his head gravely.
"I do not know, Master Kelsier. She could survive. We will need to keep her supplied with pewter. It will help her body make new blood. Even still, I have seen many strong men die from wounds smaller than this one."
Kelsier nodded.
"I arrived too late, I think," Sazed said. "When I found her gone from Lenu's mansion, I came to Luthadel as quickly as I could. I used up an entire metal mine to make the trip with haste. I was still too late."
"No, my friend," Kelsier said. "You've done well this night. Far better than I."
Sazed sighed, then reached over and fingered the large book he'd set aside before beginning the surgery. The tome was wet with rainwater and blood. Kelsier regarded it, frowning. "What is that, anyway?"
"I don't know," Sazed said. "I found it at the palace while I was searching for the child. It is written in Hleni."
Hleni, the language of Hlenium, the ancient pre-ascension homeland of the Lord Ruler. Kelsier perked up a bit. "Can you translate it?"
"Perhaps," Sazed said, suddenly sounding very tired. "But not for a time, I think. After this evening, I shall need to rest."
Kelsier nodded, calling for one of the apprentices to prepare Sazed a room. The terraceman nodded thankfully, then walked wearily up the stairs.
"He saved more than Vin's life tonight," Dachshund said, approaching quietly from behind. "What you did was stupid, even for you."
"I had to know, Dox," he said. "I had to go back. What if the Atium really is in there?"
"You said that it isn't."
"I said that," Kelsier said with a nod, "and I'm mostly sure. But what if I'm wrong?"
"That's no excuse," Dachshund said angrily. "Now Vin is dying and the Lord Ruler is alerted to us. Wasn't it enough that you got Mare killed trying to get into that room?"
Kelsier paused, but he was too drained to feel any anger. He sighed, sitting down.
"There's more, Dox." Dachshund frowned.
"I've avoided talking about the Lord Ruler to the others," Kelsier said. "But I'm worried. The plan is good, but I have this terrible haunting feeling that we'll never succeed as long as he's alive. We can take his money, we can take his armies, we can trick him out of the city. But I still worry that we won't be able to stop him."
Dachshund frowned.
"You're serious about this 11th metal business, then?"
Kelsier nodded.
"I searched for 2 years to find a way to kill him. Men have tried everything. He ignores normal wounds, and decapitation only annoys him. A group of soldiers burned down his inn during one of the early wars. The Lord Ruler walked out as barely more than a skeleton, then healed in a matter of seconds. Only the stories of the 11th metal offered any hope. But I can't make it work. That's why I had to go back to the palace. The Lord Ruler is hiding something in that room. I can feel it. I can't help thinking that if we knew what it was, we'd be able to stop him."
"You didn't have to take Vin with you."
"She followed me," Kelsier said. "I worried that she'd try to get in on her own if I left her. The girl has a headstrong streak, Dox. She hides it well, but she's blasted stubborn when she wants to be."
Dachshund sighed, then nodded quietly.
"And we still don't know what's in that room."
Kelsier eyed the book Sazed had set on the table. The rainwater had marked it, but the tome was obviously designed to endure. It was strapped tightly to prevent water from seeping in, and the cover was of well-cured leather.
"No," Kelsier finally said, "we don't. But we do have that, whatever it is."
"Was it worth it, Kel?" Dachshund asked. "Was this insane stunt really worth nearly getting yourself and the child killed?"
"I don't know,"
Kelsier said honestly. He turned to Doxson, meeting his friend's eyes. Ask me once we know whether or not Vin will live. The end of part two. Part three. Children of a Bleeding Sun. Many think that my journey started in Hlenium, that great city of wonder. They forget that I was no king when my quest began. Far from it. I think it would do men well to remember that this task was not begun by emperors, priests, prophets, or generals. It didn't start in Hlenium or Cordell, nor did it come from the great nations to the east or the fiery empire of the west. It began in a small, unimportant town whose name would mean nothing to you. It began with a youth, the son of a blacksmith, who was unremarkable in every way, except, perhaps, in his ability to get into trouble. It began with me. 16. Vin awoke. The pain told her that Rhene had beaten her again. What had she done? Had she been too friendly to one of the other crew members? Had she made a foolish comment, drawing the crew leader's ire? She was to remain quiet, always quiet, staying away from the others, never calling attention to herself. Otherwise, he would beat her. She had to learn, he said. She had to learn. But her pain seemed too strong for that. It had been a long time since she could remember hurting this much. She coughed slightly, opening her eyes. She lay in a bed that was far too comfortable, and a lanky teenage boy sat in a chair beside her bed.
Lestibornis, she thought. That's his name. I'm in Clubs's shop.
Lestibornis jumped to his feet.
You're awaking!
She tried to speak, but just coughed again, and the boy hurriedly gave her a cup of water. Vin sipped it thankfully, grimacing at the pain in her side. In fact, her entire body felt like it had been pummeled soundly.
Lestibornis, she finally croaked. Nodding as the now, he said. Kelsier wasing the hit with my name. Changed it to Spook.
Spook? Vin asked. It fits. How long have I been asleep?
2 weeks, the boy said. Wait here.
He scrambled away, and she could hear him calling out in the distance.
2 weeks?
She sifted the cup, trying to organize her muddled memories. Reddish afternoon sunlight shone through the window, lighting the room. She set the cup aside, checking her side, where she found a large white bandage.
That's where the Inquisitor hit me, she thought. I should be dead.
Her side was bruised and discolored from where she'd hit the roof after falling, and her body bore a dozen other nicks, bruises, and scrapes. All in all, she felt absolutely terrible.
Vin! Doxson said, stepping into the room. You're awake!
Barely,
Vin said with a groan, lying back against her pillow. Doxson chuckled, walking over and sitting on Lestibornis's stool.
How much do you remember?
Most everything, I think, she said. We fought our way into the palace, but there were inquisitors. They chased us, and Kelsier fought.
She stopped, looking at Doxson.
Kelsier, is he?
Kel's fine, Doxson said. He came out of the incident in far better shape than you did. He knows the palace fairly well, from the plans we made 3 years ago, and he...
Vin frowned as Doxson trailed off.
What? He said the Inquisitors didn't seem very focused on killing him. They left one to chase him and sent two after you.
Why? Vin thought. Did they simply want to concentrate their energy on the weakest enemy first? Or is there another reason? She sat back thoughtfully, working through the events of that night.
Sazed,
Vin finally said.
He saved me. The Inquisitor was about to kill me, but... Dox, what is he?
Sazed? Doxson asked. That's probably a question I should let him answer. Is he here?
Doxson shook his head.
He had to return to Feliz. Breeze and Kel are out recruiting, and Ham left last week to inspect our army. He won't be back for another month at least.
Vin nodded, feeling drowsy.
Drink the rest of your water, Doxson suggested. There's something in it to help with the pain.
Vin downed the rest of the drink, then rolled over and let sleep take her again. Kelsier was there when she awoke. He sat on the stool by her bed, hands clasped with his elbows on his knees, watching her by the faint light of a lantern. He smiled when she opened her eyes.
Welcome back.
She immediately reached for the cup of water on the bedstand.
How's the job going?
He shrugged.
The army is growing, and Renu has begun to purchase weapons and supplies. Your suggestion regarding the ministry turned out to be a good one. We found Theron's contact, and we've nearly negotiated a deal that will let us place someone as a ministry acolyte.
Marsh? Vin asked. Will he do it himself?
Kelsier nodded.
He's always had a certain fascination with the ministry. If any Ska can pull off imitating an obligator, it will be Marsh.
Vin nodded, sipping her drink.
There was something different about Kelsier. It was subtle, a slight alteration in his air and attitude. Things had changed during her sickness.
Vin, Kelsier said hesitantly, I owe you an apology. I nearly got you killed.
Vin snorted quietly.
It's not your fault. I made you take me.
You shouldn't have been able to make me, Kelsier said. My original decision to send you away was the right one. Please accept the apology.
Vin nodded quietly.
What do you need me to do now? The job has to go forward, right?
Kelsier smiled.
Indeed it does. As soon as you're up to it, I'd like you to move back to Feliz. We've created a cover story saying that Lady Valette has taken sick, but rumors are starting to appear. The sooner you can be seen in the flesh by visitors, the better.
I can go tomorrow, Vin said.
Kelsier chuckled.
I doubt it, but you can go soon. For now, just rest.
He stood, moving to leave.
Kelsier?
Vin asked, causing him to pause. He turned, looking at her. Vin struggled to formulate what she wanted to say.
The palace. The Inquisitors. We're not invincible, are we?
She flushed. It sounded stupid when she said it that way. Kelsier, however, just smiled. He seemed to understand what she meant.
No, Vin, he said quietly. We're far from it.
Vin watched the landscape pass outside her carriage window. The vehicle, sent from Mansion Renu, had supposedly taken Lady Valette for a ride through Luthadel. In reality, it hadn't picked up Vin until it had stopped briefly by Clubs's street. Now, however, her window shades were open, showing her again to the world, assuming anyone cared. The carriage made its way back toward Feliz. Kelsier had been right. She'd had to rest 3 more days in Clubs's shop before feeling strong enough to make the trip. In part, she'd waited simply because she had dreaded struggling into a noblewoman's dress with her bruised arms and wounded side. Still, it felt good to be up again. There had been something wrong about simply recovering in bed. Such a lengthy period of rest wouldn't have been given to a regular thief. Thieves either got back to work quickly or were abandoned for dead. Those who couldn't bring in money for food couldn't be allowed to take up space in the lair.
But that isn't the only way people live, Vin thought.
She was still uncomfortable with that knowledge. It hadn't mattered to Kelsier and the others that she'd drained their resources. They hadn't exploited her weakened state, but had cared for her, each one spending time at her bedside. Most notable among the vigilists had been the young Lestibornis. Vin didn't even feel that she knew him very well, yet Kelsier said that the boy had spent hours watching over her during her coma. What did one make of a world where a crew leader agonized over his people? In the underground, each person bore responsibility for what happened to them, The weaker segment of a crew had to be allowed to die, lest they keep everyone else from earning enough to survive. If a person got captured by the Ministry, you left them to their fate and hoped that they didn't betray too much. You didn't worry about your own guilt at putting them in danger.
"They're fools," Reen's voice whispered. "This entire plan will end in disaster, and your death will be your own fault for not leaving when you could."
Reen had left when he could. Perhaps he'd known that the Inquisitors would eventually hunt her down for the powers she unwittingly possessed. He always had known when to leave. It was no accident, she thought, that he hadn't ended up slaughtered with the rest of Cayman's crew. And yet she'd ignored Reen's promptings in her head, instead letting the carriage pull her toward Feliz. It wasn't that she felt completely secure in her place with Kelsier's crew. Indeed, in a way, her place with these people was making her even more apprehensive. What if they stopped needing her? What if she became useless to them? She had to prove to them that she could do what they needed her to. There were functions to attend, a society to infiltrate. She had so much work to do. She couldn't afford to spend any more of it sleeping. In addition, she needed to return to her allomantic practice sessions. It had only taken a few short months for her to grow dependent upon her powers, and she longed for the freedom of leaping through the mists, of pulling and pushing her way through the skies. Creedic Shaw had taught her that she wasn't invincible. But Kelsier's survival with barely a scratch proved that it was possible to be much better than she was. Vin needed to practice, to grow in strength until she too could escape Inquisitors like Kelsier had. The carriage turned a bend and rolled into Feliz, the familiar pastoral suburb, made Vin smile to herself. And she leaned against the open carriage window, feeling the breeze. With luck, some streetgoers would gossip that Lady Valette had been seen riding through the city. She arrived at Mansion Renu a few short turns later. A footman opened the door, and Vin was surprised to see Lord Renu himself waiting outside the carriage to help her down.
"My lord," she said, giving him her hand, "surely you have more important things to attend to?"
"Nonsense," he said. "A lord must be allowed time to dote upon his favored niece. How was your ride?"
"Does he ever break character?"
He didn't ask after the others in Luthadel, or give any indication that he knew of her wound.
"It was refreshing, uncle," she said as they walked up the steps to the mansion doors.
Vin was thankful for the pewter burning lightly in her stomach to give strength to her still weak legs. Kelsier had warned against using it too much, lest she grow dependent upon its power, but she saw little alternative until she was healed.
"That is wonderful," Renu said. "Perhaps, once you are feeling better, we should take lunch together on the garden balcony. It has been warm lately, despite the coming winter."
"That would be very pleasant," Vin said.
Before, she'd found the impostor's noble bearing intimidating. Yet as she slipped into the persona of Lady Valette, she experienced the same calmness as before. Vin the thief was nothing to a man such as Renu, but Valette the socialite was another matter.
"Very good," Renu said, pushing inside the entryway. "However, let us attend to that on another day. For now, you would likely prefer to rest from your journey."
"Actually, my lord, I'd like to visit Sazed. I have some matters I must discuss with the steward."
"Ah," Renew said. "You will find him in the library, working on one of my projects."
"Thank you," Vin said.
Renew nodded, then walked away, his dueling cane clicking against the white marble floor. Vin frowned, trying to decide if he was completely sane. Could someone really adopt a persona that holy?
"You do it," Vin reminded herself. "When you become Lady Valette, you show a completely different side of yourself."
She turned, flaring pewter to help her climb the northern set of stairs. She let her flare lapse as she reached the top, returning to a normal burn. As Kelsier said, it was dangerous to flare metals for too extended a period. An allomancer could quickly make their body dependent. She took a few breaths. Climbing the stairs had been difficult, even with pewter. Then walked down the corridor to the library. Sazed sat at a desk beside a small coal stove on the far side of the small room, writing on a pad of paper. He wore his standard steward's robes and a pair of thin spectacles sat at the end of his nose. Vin paused in the doorway, regarding the man who had saved her life.
"Why is he wearing spectacles? I've seen him read before without them."
He seemed completely absorbed by his work, periodically studying a large tome on the desk, then turning to scribble notes on his pad.
"You're an allomancer," Vin said quietly.
Sazed paused, then set down his pen and turned.
"What makes you say that, Mistress Vin?" "You got to Luthadel too quickly. Lord Renu keeps several swift messenger horses in his stables. I could have taken one of those." "You found me at the palace," Vin said. "Kelsier told me of his plans, and I correctly assumed that you had followed him. Locating you was a stroke of luck, one that nearly took me too long to achieve."
Vin frowned.
"You killed the Inquisitor." "Killed?"
Sazed asked.
"No, mistress. It takes far more power than I possess to kill one of those monstrosities. I simply distracted him."
Vin stood in the doorway for a moment longer, trying to figure out why Sazed was being so ambiguous.
"So are you an allomancer or not?"
He smiled, then he pulled a stool out from beside the desk.
"Please, sit down."
Vin did as requested, crossing the room and sitting on the stool, her back to a massive bookshelf.
"What would you think if I told you that I wasn't an allomancer?"
Sazed asked.
"I'd think that you were lying," Vin said. "Have you known me to lie before?" "The best liars are those who tell the truth most of the time."
Sazed smiled, regarding her through bespectacled eyes.
"That is true, I think. Still, what proof have you that I am an allomancer?"
"You did things that couldn't have been done without allomancy."
"Oh? A mistborn for 2 months, and already you know all that is possible in the world?"
Vin paused. Up until just recently, she hadn't even known much about allomancy. Perhaps there was more to the world than she had assumed.
"There's always another secret."
Kelsier's words.
"So," she said slowly, "what exactly is a keeper?"
Sazed smiled.
"Now, that is a far more clever question, mistress. Keepers are storehouses. We remember things so that they can be used in the future."
"Like religions," Vin said.
Sazed nodded.
"Religious truths are my particular specialty."
"But you remember other things, too?"
Sazed nodded.
"Like what?"
"Well," Sazed said, closing the tome he had been studying, "languages, for instance."
Vin immediately recognized the glyph-covered book.
"The book I found in the palace. How did you get it?"
"I happened across it while searching for you," the terraceman said. "It is written in a very old language, one that hasn't been spoken regularly in nearly a millennium."
"But you speak it?" Vin asked.
Sazed nodded.
"Enough to translate this, I think." "And how many languages do you know?"
172, Sazed said. "Most of them, such as Hleni, are no longer spoken. The Lord Ruler's unity movement of the 5th century made certain of that. The language people now speak is actually a distant dialect of Terrace, the language of my homeland."
172, Vin thought with amazement.
"That sounds impossible. One man couldn't remember that much."
"Not one man," Sazed said. "One keeper. What I do is similar to allomancy, but not the same. You draw power from metals. I use them to create memories."
"How?"
Vin asked. Sazed shook his head.
perhaps another time, mistress. My kind, we prefer to maintain our secrets. The Lord Ruler hunts us with a remarkable, confusing passion. We are far less threatening than Mistborn, yet he ignores Allomancers and seeks to destroy us, hating the Terrace people because of us.
Hating? Vin asked. You're treated better than regular, Ska. You're given positions of respect.
That is true, mistress, Sazed said. But in a way, the Ska are more free. Most Terracemen are raised from birth to be stewards. There are very few of us left. And the Lord Ruler's breeders control our reproduction. No Terraceman steward is allowed to have a family, or even to bear children.
Vin snorted. That seems like it would be hard to enforce. Sazed paused, hand laying on the cover of the large book.
Why, not at all, he said with a frown. All Terracemen stewards are eunuchs, child. I assumed you knew that.
Vin froze, then she blushed furiously.
I'm sorry. Truly and surely no apology is required. I was castrated soon after my birth, as is standard for those who will be stewards. Often I think I would have easily traded my life for that of a common Ska. My people are less than slaves. They're fabricated automatons, created by breeding programs, trained from birth to fulfill the Lord Ruler's wishes.
Vin continued to blush, cursing her lack of tact. Why hadn't anyone told her? Sazed, however, didn't seem offended. He never seemed to get angry about anything.
Probably a function of his condition, Vin thought. That's what the breeders must want. Docile, even-tempered stewards.
But, Vin said, frowning, you're a rebel, Sazed. You're fighting the Lord Ruler.
I am something of a deviant, Sazed said. And my people are not as completely subjugated as the Lord Ruler would believe, I think. We hide keepers beneath his very eyes, and some of us even gather the courage to break our training.
He paused, then shook his head.
It is not an easy thing, however. We are a weak people, mistress. We are eager to do as we are told, quick to seek subjugation. Even I, whom you dub a rebel, immediately sought out a position of stewardship and subservience. We are not so brave as we would wish, I think.
You were brave enough to save me, Vin said. Sazed smiled.
Ah, but there was an element of obedience in that, too. I promised Master Kelsier that I would see to your safety.
Ah, she thought. She had wondered if he'd had a reason for his actions. After all, who would risk their life simply to save Vin? She sat for a moment in thought, and Sazed turned back to his book. Finally, she spoke again, drawing the Terraceman's attention.
Sazed? Yes, mistress. Who betrayed Kelsier 3 years ago?
Sazed paused, then set down his fountain pen.
The facts are unclear, mistress. Most of the crew assumes it was Mare, I think.
Mare? Vin asked. Kelsier's wife? Sazed nodded.
Apparently, she was one of the only people who could have done it. In addition, the Lord Ruler himself implicated her.
But wasn't she sent to the pits, too?
She died there, Sazed said. Master Kelsier is reticent about the pits, but I sense that the scars he bears from that horrid place go much deeper than the ones you see on his arms. I don't think he ever knew if she was the traitor or not. My brother said that anyone would betray you if you had the right chance and a good enough motive.
Sazed frowned.
Even if such a thing were true, I would not want to live believing it.
It seems better than what happened to Kelsier, being turned over to the Lord Ruler by one you thought you loved.
Kelsier is different lately, Vin said. He seems more reserved. Is that because he feels guilty for what happened to me?
I suspect that is part of it, Sazed said.
However, he is also coming to realize that there is a large difference between heading a small crew of thieves and organizing a large rebellion. He can't take the risks he once did. The process is changing him for the better, I think.
Vin wasn't so certain. However, she remained silent, realizing with frustration how tired she was. Even sitting on a stool seemed strenuous to her now.
"Go and sleep, mistress," Sazed said, picking up his pen and relocating his place in the tome with his finger. "You survived something that probably should have killed you. Give your body the thanks it deserves. Let it rest."
Vin nodded tiredly, then climbed to her feet and left him scribbling quietly in the afternoon light.
Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if I'd remained there, in that lazy village of my birth. I'd have become a smith, like my father. Perhaps I'd have a family, sons of my own. Perhaps someone else would have come to carry this terrible burden, someone who could bear it far better than I, someone who deserved to be a hero.
17. Before coming to Mansion Renu, Vin had never seen a cultivated garden. On burglaries or scouting missions, she had occasionally seen ornamental plants, but she'd never given them much heed. They, like many noble interests, had seemed frivolous to her. She hadn't realized how beautiful the plants could be when arranged carefully. Mansion Renu's garden balcony was a thin, oval structure that overlooked the grounds below. The gardens weren't large. They required too much water and attention to form more than a thin perimeter around the back of the building. Still, they were marvelous. Instead of mundane browns and whites, the cultivated plants were of deeper, more vibrant colors, shades of red, orange, and yellow, with the colors concentrated in their leaves. The groundskeepers had planted them to make intricate, beautiful patterns. Closer to the balcony, exotic trees with colorful yellow leaves gave shade and protected from ash falls. It was a very mild winter, and most of the trees still held their leaves. The air felt cool, and the rustling of branches in the wind was soothing. Almost soothing enough, in fact, to make Vin forget how annoyed she was.
"Would you like more tea, child?" Lord Renu asked.
He didn't wait for an answer. He simply waved for a servant to rush forward and refill her cup. Vin sat on a plush cushion, her wicker chair designed for comfort. During the last 4 weeks, her every whim and desire had been met. Servants cleaned up after her, primped her, fed her, and even helped bathe her. Renu saw that anything she asked for was given her, and she certainly wasn't expected to do anything strenuous, dangerous, or even slightly inconvenient. In other words, her life was maddeningly boring. Before her time at Mansion Renu had been monopolized by Sazed's lessons and Kelsier's training. She'd slept during the days, having only minimal contact with the mansion staff. Now, however, allomancy, at least the nighttime jumping kind, was forbidden her. Her wound was only partially healed, and too much motion reopened it. Sazed still gave her occasional lessons, but his time was dominated by translating the book. He spent long hours in the library, poring over its pages with an uncharacteristically excited air.
"He's found a new bit of lore," Vin thought. "To a keeper, that's probably as intoxicating as street spice."
She sipped at her tea with repressed petulance, eyeing the nearby servants. They seemed like scavenger birds, roosting and waiting for any opportunity to make Vin as comfortable and as frustrated as possible. Renu wasn't much help either. His idea of taking lunch with Vin was to sit and attend to his own duties, making notes on ledgers or dictating letters, while eating. Her attendance seemed important to him, but he rarely paid much attention to her, other than to ask how her day had been. Yet she forced herself to act the part of a prim noblewoman. Lord Renu had hired some new servants that didn't know about the job. Not house staff, but gardeners and workmen. Kelsier and Renu had worried that the other houses would grow suspicious if they couldn't get at least a few servant spies onto the Renu grounds. Kelsier didn't see it as a danger to the job, but it did mean that Vin had to maintain her persona whenever possible.
"I can't believe that people live like this," Vin thought as some servants began clearing away the meal. "How can noblewomen fill their days with so much nothing? No wonder everyone's eager to attend those balls."
"Is your respite pleasant, dear?"
Renu asked, poring over another ledger.
"Yes, uncle," Vin said through tight lips. "Quite."
"You should be up to a shopping trip soon," Renu said, looking up at her. "Perhaps you would like to visit Canton Street? Get some new earrings to replace that pedestrian stud you wear?"
Vin reached a hand to her ear, where her mother's earring still sat.
"No," she said. "I'll keep this."
Renu frowned, but said no more, for a servant approached and drew his attention.
"My lord," the servant said to Renu, "a carriage just arrived from Luthadel."
Vin perked up. That was the servant's way of saying that a member of the crew had arrived.
"Ah, very good," Renu said. "Show them up, Tonson."
"Yes, my lord."
A few minutes later, Kelsier, Breeze, Yeadon, and Doxon walked out onto the balcony. Renu discreetly waved to the servants who closed the glass balcony doors and left the crew in privacy. Several men took up position just inside, watching to make certain that the wrong people didn't have an opportunity to eavesdrop.
"Are we interrupting your meal?" Doxon asked.
"No,"
Vin said quickly, cutting off Lord Renew's reply.
"Sit, please."
Kelsier strolled over to the balcony's ledge, looking out over the garden and grounds.
"Nice view you have here."
"Kelsier, is that wise?"
Renu asked.
"Some of the gardeners are men for whom I cannot vouch."
Kelsier chuckled.
"If they can recognize me from this distance, they deserve more than the great houses are paying them."
However, he did leave the balcony edge, walking over to the table and spinning a chair, then sitting down on it the wrong way. Over the last few weeks, he had mostly returned to his old, familiar self. Yet there were still changes. He held meetings more often, discussed more of his plans with the crew. He also still seemed different, more thoughtful.
"Says it was right," Vin thought. "Our attack on the palace might have been near deadly for me, but it has changed Kelsier for the better."
"We thought we'd have our meeting here this week," Doxon said, "since you two rarely get to participate."
"That was most thoughtful of you, Master Doxon," Lord Renu said. "But your concern is unnecessary. We are doing just fine."
"No," Vin interrupted. "No, we aren't. Some of us need information. What's happening with the crew? How is the recruitment going?"
Renu eyed her with dissatisfaction. Vin, however, ignored him.
"He's not really a lord," she told herself. "He's just another crew member. My opinion counts as much as his. Now that the servants are gone, I can speak how I want."
Kelsier chuckled.
"Well, captivity's made her a bit more outspoken, if nothing else."
"I don't have anything to do," Vin said. "It's driving me insane."
Breeze set his cup of wine on the table.
"Some would find your state quite enviable, Vin."
"Then they must already be insane."
"Oh, they're mostly noblemen," Kelsier said. "So, yes, they're quite mad."
"The job," Vin reminded. "What's happening?"
"Recruitment is still too slow," Doxon said. "But we're improving."
"We may have to sacrifice further security for numbers, Kelsier," Yeadon said.
That's a change, too, she thought, impressed as she noted Yeadon's civility. He had taken to wearing nicer clothing, not quite a full gentleman's suit like Doxon or Breeze, but at least a well-cut jacket and trousers, with a buttoning shirt beneath, all kept free of soot.
"That can't be helped, Yeadon," Kelsier said. Fortunately, Ham's doing well with the troops. I had a message from him just a few days ago. He's impressed with their progress. Breeze snorted.
Be warned. Hammond does tend to be a bit optimistic about these kind of things. If the army were made up of one-legged mutes, he would praise their balance and their listening skills.
I should like to see the army, Yeadon said eagerly.
Soon, Kelsier promised.
We should be able to get Marsh into the ministry within the month, Doxson said, nodding to Sazed as the terracemen passed their sentries and entered the balcony.
Hopefully Marsh will be able to give us some insight as to how to deal with the Steel Inquisitors.
Vin shivered.
They are a concern, Breeze agreed. Considering what a couple of them did to you two, I don't envy capturing the palace with them in there. They are as dangerous as Mistborn.
More, Vin said quietly. Can the army really fight them?
Yeadon asked uncomfortably.
I mean, they're supposed to be immortal, aren't they?
Marsh will find the answer, Kelsier promised.
Yeadon paused, then nodded, accepting Kelsier's word.
Yes, changed indeed, Vin thought. It appeared that not even Yeadon could resist Kelsier's charisma for an extended period of time.
In the meantime, Kelsier said, I'm hoping to hear what Sazed has learned about the Lord Ruler.
Sazed sat, laying his tome on the tabletop.
I will tell you what I can, though this is not the book that I first assumed it to be. I thought that Mistress Vin had recovered some ancient religious text, but it is of a far more mundane nature.
Mundane? Doxson asked. How?
It is a journal, Master Doxson, Sazed said. A record that appears to have been penned by the Lord Ruler himself, or rather, the man who became the Lord Ruler. Even ministry teachings agree that before the Ascension, he was a mortal man. This book tells of his life just prior to his final battle at the Well of Ascension 1,000 years ago. Mostly it is a record of his travels, a narration of the people he met, the places he visited, and the trials he faced during his quest.
Interesting, Breeze said, but how does it help us?
I am not certain, Master Ladrian, Sazed said. However, understanding the real history behind the Ascension will be of use, I think. At the very least, it will give us some insight to the Lord Ruler's mind.
Kelsier shrugged. The Ministry thinks it's important. Vin said she found it in some kind of shrine in the Central Palace complex.
Which, of course, Breeze noted, doesn't at all raise any questions regarding its authenticity.
I do not believe it to be a fabrication, Master Ladrian, Sazed said. It contains a remarkable level of detail, especially regarding unimportant issues, like packmen and supplies. In addition, the Lord Ruler it depicts is very conflicted. If the Ministry were going to devise a book for worship, they would present their god with more divinity, I think.
I'll want to read it when you're done, Sayes, Doxson said. And I, Breeze said.
Some of Clubs' apprentices occasionally work as scribes, Kelsier said. We'll have them make a copy for each of you.
Handy lot, those, Doxson noted.
Kelsier nodded. So where does that leave us? The group paused, then Doxson nodded to Vin.
With the nobility,
Kelsier frowned slightly.
I can go back to work, Vin said quickly. I'm mostly healed now.
Kelsier shot a look at Sazed, who raised an eyebrow. He checked on her wound periodically. Apparently he didn't like what he saw.
Kel, Vin said, I'm going insane. I grew up as a thief, scrambling for food in space. I can't just sit around and let these servants pamper me. Besides, I have to prove that I can still be useful to this crew.
Well, Kelsier said, you're one of the reasons we came here today. There's a ball this weekend that—
I'll go, Vin said.
Kelsier held up a finger. Hear me out, Vin. You've been through a lot lately, and this infiltration could get dangerous.
Kelsier,
Vin said flatly. My whole life has been dangerous. I'm going. Kelsier didn't look convinced.
She has to do it, Kel, Doxson said. For one thing, the nobility is going to get suspicious if she doesn't start going to parties again. For another, we need to know what she sees. Having servant spies on the staff isn't the same as having a spy listening to local plots. You know that.
All right, then, Kelsier finally said. But you have to promise not to use physical allomancy until Sazed says otherwise. Later that evening, Vin still couldn't believe how eager she was to go to the ball. She stood in her room, looking over the different gown ensembles that Doxson had found for her. Since she had been forced to wear nobleman's attire for a good month straight, she was beginning to find dresses just a shade more comfortable than she once had.
Not that they aren't frivolous, of course, she thought, inspecting the four gowns. All of that lace, the layers of material. A simple shirt and trousers are so much more practical.
Yet there was something special about the gowns, something in their beauty, like the gardens outside. When regarded as static items, like a solitary plant, the dresses were only mildly impressive. However, when she considered attending the ball, the gowns took on a new meaning. They were beautiful, and they would make her beautiful. They were the face she would show to the court, and she wanted to choose the right one.
I wonder if Ellen Venture will be there.
Didn't Sazed say that most of the younger aristocrats attended every ball? She lay a hand on one dress, black with silver embroiderings. It would match her hair, but was it too dark? Most of the other women wore colorful dresses. Muted colors seemed reserved for men's suits. She eyed a yellow gown, but it just seemed a little too perky, and the white one was too ornate. That left the red. The neckline was lower, not that she had a lot to show, but it was beautiful. A bit gossamer, with full sleeves that were made of translucent mesh in places, it enticed her. But it seemed so blatant. She picked it up, feeling the soft material in her fingers, imagining herself wearing it.
How did I get to this? Vin thought. This thing would be impossible to hide in. These frilly creations, these aren't me.
And yet, part of her longed to be back at the ball again. The daily life of a noblewoman frustrated her, but her memories of that one night were alluring. The beautiful couples dancing, the perfect atmosphere and music, the marvelous crystalline windows.
I don't even realize when I'm wearing perfume anymore, she realized with shock.
She found it preferable to bathe in scented water each day, and the servants even perfumed her clothing. It was all subtle, of course, but it would be enough to give her away while sneaking. Her hair had grown longer and had been carefully cut by Renew's stylist so that it fell around her ears, curling just slightly. She no longer looked quite so scrawny in the mirror, despite her lengthy sickness. Regular meals had filled her out.
I'm becoming... Vin paused.
She didn't know what she was becoming. Certainly not a noblewoman. Noblewomen didn't get annoyed when they couldn't go out stalking at night. Yet she wasn't really Vin the Urchin anymore. She was...
Mistborn.
Vin carefully laid the beautiful red dress back on her bed, then crossed the room to look out the window. The sun was close to setting. Soon the mists would come, though as usual, Sazed would have guards posted to make certain that she didn't go on any unauthorized allomantic romps. She hadn't complained at the precautions. He was right. Unwatched, she probably would have broken her promise long ago. She caught a glimpse of motion to her right, and could just barely make out a figure standing out on the garden balcony. Kelsier. Vin stood for a moment, then left her rooms. Kelsier turned as she walked onto the balcony. She paused, not wanting to interrupt, but he gave her one of his characteristic smiles. She walked forward, joining him at the carved stone balcony railing. He turned and looked westward. not at the grounds, but beyond them, toward the wilderness lit by a setting sun outside of town. "Does it ever look wrong to you, Vin?"
"Wrong?"
she asked. Kelsier nodded. "The dry plants, the angry sun, the smoky black sky." Vin shrugged. "How can those things be right or wrong? That's just the way things are." "I suppose," Kelsier said. "But I think your mindset is part of the wrongness. The world shouldn't look like this." Vin frowned.
"How do you know that?"
Kelsier reached into his vest pocket and pulled out a piece of paper. He unfolded it with a gentle touch, then handed it to Vin. She accepted the sheet, holding it carefully. It was so old and worn that it seemed close to breaking at the creases. It didn't contain any words, just an old, faded picture. It depicted a strange shape, something like a plant, though not one Vin had ever seen. It was too flimsy. It didn't have a thick stalk, and its leaves were far too delicate. At its top, it had a strange collection of leaves that were a different color from the rest. "It's called a flower," Kelsier said. "They used to grow on plants before the Ascension. Descriptions of them appear in the old poems and stories, things that only keepers and rebel sages know about anymore. Apparently, these plants were beautiful, and they had a pleasant smell."
"Plants that smell?" Vin asked. "Like fruit?"
"Something like that, I think. Some of the reports even claim that these flowers grew into fruit in the days before the Ascension." Vin stood quietly, frowning, trying to imagine such a thing. "That picture belonged to my wife, Mare," Kelsier said quietly. "Doxson found it in her things after we were taken. He kept it, hoping that we would return. He gave it to me after I escaped." Vin looked down at the picture again. "Mare was fascinated by pre-ascension times," Kelsier said, still staring out over the gardens. In the distance, the sun touched the horizon and grew an even deeper red. "She collected things like that paper, pictures and descriptions of the old times. I think that fascination, along with the fact that she was a Tin-Eye, is part of what led her to the underground and to me. She's the one who first introduced me to Sazed, though I didn't use him in my crew at the time. He wasn't interested in thieving." Vin folded up the paper.
"And you keep this picture still? After what she did to you?"
Kelsier fell silent for a moment. Then he eyed her. "Been listening at doors again, have we? Oh, don't worry, I suppose it's common enough knowledge." In the distance, the setting sun became a blaze, its ruddy light illuminating clouds and smoke alike. "Yes, I keep the flower," Kelsier said. "I'm not really sure why. But do you stop loving someone just because they betray you?" "I don't think so. That's what makes the betrayal hurt so much. Pain, frustration, anger. And I still loved her. I still do."
"How?" Vin asked. "How can you? And how can you possibly trust people? Didn't you learn from what she did to you?"
Kelsier shrugged.
I think, given the choice between loving Mare, betrayal included, and never knowing her, I'd choose love. I risked, and I lost. But the risk was still worth it. It's the same with my friends. Suspicion is healthy in our profession, but only to an extent. I'd rather trust my men than worry about what will happen if they turn on me."
"That sounds foolish," Vin said.
"Is happiness foolish?" Kelsier asked, turning toward her. "Where have you been happier, Vin? On my crew, or back with Cayman? Vin paused. I don't know for sure if Mare betrayed me, Kelsier said, looking back at the sunset. She always claimed that she didn't.
And she was sent to the pits, right? Vin said. That doesn't make sense if she sided with the Lord Ruler.
Kelsier shook his head, still staring into the distance. She showed up at the pits a few weeks after I was sent there. We were separated after we were caught. I don't know what happened during that time or why she was eventually sent to Hath Sin. The fact that she was sent to die hints that maybe she really didn't betray me. But... He turned toward Vin. You didn't hear him when he caught us, Vin. The Lord Ruler, he thanked her. Thanked her for betraying me. His words, spoken with such an eerie sense of honesty, mixed with the way that the plan was set up. Well, it was hard to believe, Mare. That didn't change my love, though. Not deep down. I nearly died when she did a year later, beaten before the slave masters at the pits. That night, after her corpse was taken away, I snapped.
You went mad? Vin asked.
No, Kelsier said. Snapping is an allomantic term. Our powers are latent at first. They only come out after some traumatic event. Something intense, something almost deadly. The philosophers say that a man can't command the metals until he has seen death and rejected it.
So when did it happen to me? Vin asked.
Kelsier shrugged. It's hard to tell. Growing up as you did, there were probably ample opportunities for you to snap.
He nodded as if to himself.
For me, he said, it was that night. Alone in the pits, my arms bleeding from the day's work. Mare was dead and I feared that I was responsible, that my lack of faith took away her strength and will. She died knowing that I questioned her loyalty. Maybe if I'd really loved her, I wouldn't have ever questioned. I don't know.
But you didn't die, Vin said.
Kelsier shook his head. I decided that I'd see her dream fulfilled. I'd make a world where flowers returned, a world with green plants, a world where no soot fell from the sky.
He trailed off, then sighed.
I know I'm insane.
Actually, Vin said quietly, it kind of makes sense. Finally.
Kelsier smiled. The sun sank beneath the horizon, and while its light was still a flare in the west, the mists began to appear. They didn't come from one specific place. They just sort of grew. They extended like translucent, twisting vines in the sky, curling back and forth, lengthening, dancing, melding. Mare wanted children, Kelsier said suddenly. Back when we were first married, a decade and a half ago, I didn't agree with her. I wanted to become the most famous ska thief of all time and didn't have time for things that would slow me down. It's probably a good thing that we didn't have children. The Lord Ruler might have found and killed them. But he might not have. Dox and the others survived. Now, sometimes I wish I had a piece of her with me. A child. A daughter, perhaps. With Mare's same dark hair and resilient stubbornness. He paused, then looked down at Vin. I don't want to be responsible for something happening to you, Vin. Not again. Vin frowned.
I'm not spending any more time locked in this mansion.
No, I don't suppose you will. If we try and keep you in much longer, you'll probably just show up at Clubs' shop one night having done something very foolish. We're a bit too much alike that way, you and I. Just be careful. Vin nodded.
I will.
They stood for a few more minutes, watching the mists gather. Finally, Kelsier stood up straight, stretching.
Well, for what it's worth, I'm glad you decided to join us, Vin.
Vin shrugged.
To tell you the truth, I'd kind of like to see one of those flowers for myself.
You could say that circumstances forced me to leave my home behind. Certainly if I had stayed, I would now be dead. During those days, running without knowing why, carrying a burden I didn't understand, I assumed that I would lose myself in Hlenium and seek a life of indistinction. I am slowly coming to understand that anonymity, like so many other things, has already been lost to me forever. 18. She decided to wear the red dress. It was definitely the boldest choice, but that felt right. After all, she hid her true self behind an aristocratic appearance. The more visible that appearance was, the easier it should be for her to hide. A footman opened the carriage door. Vin took a deep breath, just a little confined by the special corset she was wearing to hide her bandages, then accepted the footman's hand and climbed down. She straightened her dress, nodded to Sazed, then joined the other aristocrats, making their way up the steps to keep Ilariel. It was a bit smaller than the keep of House Venture. However, keep Ilariel apparently had a separate party ballroom, while House Venture had its gatherings in the enormous main hall. Vin eyed the other noblewomen and felt a bit of her confidence vanish. Her dress was beautiful, but the other women had so much more than just gowns. Their long flowing hair and self-assured airs matched their bejeweled figures. They filled out the upper portions of their dresses with voluptuous curves and moved elegantly in the frilled splendor of the lower folds.